You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 638. And M, it's all your fault. The skies of USA East Coast are on fire. There's smoke in the air. I feel like I'm walking around in Hong Kong circa 1993 Hyderabad, you know, right now. And more, this is all your fault. What is up with Canada setting the USA sky on fire and filling it full of smoke? I feel like we need to do something to you guys for really causing us a lot of troubles. Explain yourself, Em. Explain yourself.
There are forest fires everywhere, including the U.S. So it is not a Canadian. I mean, obviously, we have a lot of fires, and that's a huge, huge, huge problem. But there are fires in the U.S. too. So you cannot point fingers northwards.
NBC News says, this is NBC News, New York City has the worst air quality in the world as smoke from Canadian wildfires rolls in.
But there's wildfires everywhere. So the smoke is collecting
particularly bad.
From everywhere. They are because things got out of hand. It's extremely dry. There's a lot of, well, climate change is a huge issue. All that kind of stuff. We need to support the fire people who are putting this out. Go them. Go team. We will do this. We will beat the fires. Wear your masks and stuff. Run air purifiers. It's like the sun has been red for days. And it feels like, do you remember reading accounts of like Vesuvius erupting?
I've read accounts of Vesuvius erupting.
And how like the aftermath is, it's all over the world. Like everything is blanketed pretty much. Like all of the air is bad and like the sun is blotted out and all that kind of stuff. It feels like we're living in that. It's very apocalyptic.
The smoke from ferocious Canadian wildfires cast a sickly pall over much of the eastern U.S. today, worsening air quality for millions of people. The air was acrid, skylines looked orange, and municipal officials told people to stay indoors. Although 128 million people were under air quality alerts because of wildfire smoke from Canada, for smoke alone, around 100 million people were under alerts across 16 states. More than 400 wildfires are burning in Canada, according to the Canadian Interagency yep. Forest Fire Center. In Quebec, more than 150 forest fires were burning yesterday, with more than 110 considered out of control. Em, straighten this up. We need this taken care of. This is your fault.
I have my hose. I'm at the ready. I'm heading in.
All right.
That's wish me luck.
That's the can-do action I want to hear. But we're gonna have to bring it down for a moment from the Canadian wildfires. As Tina Turner has passed away. She was 83. She had a long illness in Switzerland. She had moved there a long time ago after she divorced Ike Turner and met up with a German music producer. Her last album, which I didn't realize was that long ago, 1999, 24/7. And I honestly didn't even realize that she retired. She retired in 2007. But of course, I mean, the story of Tina Turner is one of the most famous stories in rock and roll, certainly one of the most dynamic performers and dynamic singers in rock and roll, but also has the famous hook that Ike Turner kind of arguably brought attention on her in the musical press, in the musical world. And then once she got more popular than Ike because she was more talented than Ike, he started to resent that and started to beat on her. And eventually one day when he was beating her in a car, she pulled over to the side of the road. Or he pulled over the side of the road and she jumped out and left him forever, thereby making Ike Turner one of the most villainous people in all of music history and Tina Turner one of the greatest victors. And I got to say, Ike Turner sure did play his hand poorly. Meanwhile, Tina Turner, an absolute legend. Sad that she passed away, but she was 83. So, you know, that's not ancient, but at least she had a really good run and definitely her mark on music is absolutely permanent. I mean, listen to some Ike and Tina stuff. Ike and Tina stuff is amazing live. There's a Rolling Stones Rock and Roll Circus where she just lights the place on fire. And then, of course, there's a huge comeback with Private Dancer in 1980 or 1981, mm-hmm. which is also just friggin' amazing. So Tina Turner, RIP, sad that she passed away, but she certainly had an amazing mark on music. And also, man, I got to say, if you want a lesson of what not to do in music, follow the Ike Turner handbook. I mean, wow. And did that guy really, he really did, he really, he really blew it. You know what I mean? Like, man, what a loser.
What a complete asshole. Jesus Christ. I mean,
the fact of the matter, he could have been the guy that, quote, arguably invented rock and roll with Rocket 88, and then the guy that introduced the world to Tina Turner. But instead, because he's a creep that couldn't handle Tina Turner's fame, he's just basically known as the biggest woman abuser in rock music, which, wow, what a way to ruin your own legacy. But actually, isn't even fair to talk about Ike Turner when we're talking about Tina Turner. Maybe we shouldn't be talking about Ike Turner at all, because the Tina Turner story involves Ike Turner, but certainly is bigger than just Ike Turner. You know what I mean? I mean, for instance, the second half of her career was as big and maybe even bigger than the first half. Well, I don't know, half's not the right word. Second act, if you will, than the first act, you know.
Yeah, I think he deserves a brief, like, the briefest.
What an asshole.
Yeah, exactly. Like, look at this piece. Well, anyways. Like
a footnote.
Yeah, exactly. Like a footnote. And
Tina
then,
Turner
like.
Tina Turner was brought to fame as part of the Ike and Tina duo. Footnote. Ike Turner was a total asshole. And then back to the
art. Yeah. And then it's just, look at what she's able to do. Look at what she did. You know, like, look at all this music. Listen to this music. She was in, like, Mad Max. You know what I mean? And, like, focus on her own accomplishments.
You know, everyone was mentioning that she was in Mad Max 3. But I thought that was, like, a footnote in her career. Like, I thought that wasn't that big of a deal. Was that a big deal that she was in Mad Max 3?
I'm not really sure. The only reason, like, I really knew about Mad Max was because she was in it. So I think she did a lot for Mad Max more than maybe, I don't know, but she's just a badass. No,
she's
awesome.
Not in Mad Max. She's not in Mad Max. She's in Mad Max 3.
Yeah, that's like the Mad Max franchise, right? Like, that's part of it.
You were saying she did more for the Mad Max franchise, you're saying?
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, yeah. I didn't know anything about those movies. And then I was like, oh, my God, she's in one of them. And I was like, okay, I'm going to check this out. You know what I mean? Like, she was just an amazing, you know, person, musician, actor, actress, everything. Like, super, super cool. There's some videos from one of her concerts that she did in the Netherlands in, like, 2009. And she's still just kicking ass. She's belting the songs out. There's this huge production value. She looks like she's having an absolute blast, and it's amazing to see. Again, her, like you've said, her influence on, like, rock and roll and on music as a whole, like, cannot be overstated.
As a side note, also, her influence in dance is huge. Many True. Mick Jagger moves, and he's admitted to this, are borrowed or stolen from Tina Turner and many other dance. I mean, Beyonce, yeah. and whoever else. You know, those, like, I honestly guess you could argue, like, pop dancing a la Beyonce and Madonna and Rihanna and whoever else. Before Tina Turner, women didn't really dance like that in music. Like Tina Turner might be the first active female dancer, if you will. Before that, like, women, I guess you could say, were forced to just kind of stand there and smile, where Tina Turner was certainly one of the first, if not the first, to really get down on stage like James Brown, you know?
Oh my gosh, yeah, like, her energy is just incredible, you know? Like, just going. Even, like, when she got, like, older and was on stage, she's still just motoring, you know? It's awesome.
In this 2007 video, is crazy. So she would have been about almost 70, which, and yeah. It's crazy that she's getting down to 70. I see one of the commenters posted, I knew it was Emma that posted this before I clicked it, and I think they meant that as an insult, but that's actually totally a compliment. So anyways, so screw that guy, and yay for Tina Turner. So RIP Tina Turner, definitely yes. Check out her. I'm sure everyone's checked out her music, but if you haven't, check out Ike and Tina's Greatest Hits and Private Dancer, and then go from there. So speaking of another icon, Danzig is going on tour again. It's actually the first Danzig tour in a long time, maybe 4 or 5 years. Glenn Danzig has done some shows as Glenn Danzig Sings Elvis. But there haven't been that many Danzig tours for a while. Let me take a quick look here. But what's cool about the upcoming Danzig tour is Danzig the band is doing all of Danzig 1 and presumably a few other tracks, although notably Danzig anymore really only does about 13, 14, maybe 15 songs live, not a whole lot. So he'll probably do, like, the first album and, like, 3 or 4 other songs. Actually, Danzig the Band did do some shows in 2002, but it wasn't really a tour. It was kind of some random shows. So, I mean, you know, since 2018, Danzig the Band has only done 14 shows. 15 shows. Danzig the Band has only done 15 shows since 2018. So this is kind of his first big tour back. Not his big tour back. They've actually said they said, quote, "This will be the last Danzig tour for the foreseeable future." Now, sometimes the cute thing now, bands will be like, "This is our farewell tour." "Oh, but we're still going to do festivals or something like that." you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Danzig, I said he's not going to tour anymore for the past 15 years, which I don't blame him for saying that. But I'm super psyched about this. I'm seeing it in Atlantic City. I might fly out to like Vegas to see this, which would be pretty cool. So anyways, I'm super excited to see Danzig do Danzig the album. And weirdly, at this point, I'm more excited to see Danzig than I would be the Misfits, only because I've seen the Misfits twice now. And it's not that uncommon for them to be a Misfits show. But a Danzig show now is kind of uncommon, and it's cool that he's doing the first album. I haven't seen Danzig the Band in a long time, since 2018, I think. And it might be the last Danzig tour, and even Danzig string with him, you never know. So I just think it's going to be totally rad. I'm psyched, and I think it's going to be cool.
Oh, yeah. It looks like it's going to be nuts. Like, you have...
And how about the openers? The openers are Behemoth, Twin Temple, and that Slayer like band, not Nightwatch. What's that band?
It's like Midnight. It's right.
Midnight.
Yeah.
Midnight. So cool openers. Twin and more favorite Twin Temple.
Hell yeah, Twin Temple rock. Oh my god, I've seen like live videos of them. If you can like go see them if you have a chance to. Oh my god, you have to. They like spit blood on the crowd. Like it's awesome.
Honestly, Dan has got great taste in openers. Like he really has put together a really cool lineup. So I'm psyched for this for sure. I don't know. I mean, place your vote now. Will this be the last Danzig tour? Will this be our last chance to see Danzig the Band?
So like, do you mean like last full tour or last shows kind of ever?
Last full tour or last shows ever.
I don't think it's going to be their last shows ever. I was surprised at how many dates were on it, just because like when the Misfits announced shows, and I know like the Misfits and Danzig are two separate entities, but like when they announce shows, it's just like small, like kind of maybe three or four or whatever. So like to have more than that was kind of surprising. I think this is going to be their last full tour. And I think going forward, they'll just do like kind of weekenders or festival appearances or whatever. They'll just kind of play when they want. And go from there. What do you think this is going to be their last full tour?
No, I don't. I hope I'm right. That's not going to be the last. You know, Danzig says this a lot. You know, and I don't blame him. He's very much an artist, and the way he feels is what he says, but it doesn't always pan out. But anyways, I'm super excited to see. And you know, his voice, people have been critical of his voice. It's still amazing. Sometimes it's not at its tops. Apparently in Vegas earlier this year, Glenn Danzig, the person, his voice was like A+. So we'll see. Nice. We'll see. I'm definitely going to go. It's going to be rad. Sort of a similar trip. Steve Ignorant is going on tour in the USA finally after me waiting for about 10 years. He's only doing Riot Fest. But then he's also doing three other shows. He's doing Cambridge, Massachusetts, Brooklyn, New York, and Philly. Openers for those three shows are Here's Collective and All Torn Up. Philly show is at the Yuki Club, which is a relatively small venue, maybe 350 people. And it's very much a punk club, if you will, in that like it's not like some Ticketmaster thing, which is very cool. And so I saw Steve Ignorant does Crass a long time ago, about 2012, I think it was, maybe even before that. And it was amazing. They did about 40 songs. This is when Steve first started doing Crass stuff again. And there was literally people protesting outside he's doing Crass material, which is so stupid. I mean, he's not saying that he's Crass. He's not saying that he represents Crass. He says, "I'm one of the guys that wrote a lot of the music in Crass, and I'm playing those songs live." Me, Steve Ignorant, not Crass. And if you ask me, there is no other more fitting person to do Crass except for Steve Ignorant, Penny Rimbaud, Eve Libertine, and G Voucher. And so I think it's include. I mean, would you rather them not perform the music they wrote? I really don't get the. I do get the protest. The protest is that he's commercializing something that was never supposed to be commercial in the first place. However, Crass gigs weren't free; they cost money. But also, it's like, as Steve has mentioned, he spent his 20s and up to mid-30s being in a band. At that time, he sacrificed his ability to kind of get a profession or something. And so for a while, he kind of had no way to make money and had to be in bands to make money. And so I'm glad that Steve's performing this music. It's rad. I'm also glad that he's kind of being compensated for it. And also, as a fan, it's great to see it. And also, like, he's, to a degree, generally sacrificed his livelihood in the name of our entertainment and education, if you will. So I think he's certainly entitled to that payback and reward that people should go see him do Steven Does Crass. Plus, it's totally rad and awesome, and I think it's going to be really cool. I will say, I was a little hurt that it wasn't me promoting this show, but that is a totally insane thought, because the promoter that's doing it is a professional promoter, and I think that's what he does as his job, and he promotes a ton of gigs. And so the subject of me is really annoyed. It's like, you know what? I could have made this really, really awesome. But the object of me is like, John, why would they ask you when the promoter that's doing it is a professional guy that promotes punk gigs every week of the year? So I guess I'm a little annoyed because the promoter that's promoting it ripped off one of my lineups once. It was the Sturgeon backed by Crazy in the Brains with Joe Jack Talcum. The dude straight up ripped off my lineup and just did it up in New York, which I guess the joke's on me. I should have booked more dates than I did, you know. And then later on, I had a poster with Sturgeon on it that had like a three-headed beast. And then he did a leftover Crack poster that had a three-headed beast on it. So I'm a little annoyed at the promoter, but not the end of the world. But at any rate, I'm super psyched about this. I think it's cool. And more, do you think Steve Ignorant should do Crass stuff? Or do you think he's selling out the Crass legacy?
I think he should do Crass stuff. Like, hell yeah, he wrote those songs and he has every right to be doing it. Like, I understand why people are upset, but like, there's really nothing to be upset about. Like, you're seeing somebody who created something that you love performing that thing that you love. And why is there an issue there? You know, like, of course, like you mentioned, when Crass were going, they charged for gigs. Like, this is no different. It's not like he's playing you know, like huge arenas and different things. You know, he's playing like really, like you mentioned, like with the Yuki Club, like really cool venues, you know. Like, he's doing everything right and doing like the music justice and himself justice and making sure that he can continue to live, which is always a good thing. And like, also you have the Heroes Collective opening for some of the US shows, and that would just be an absolutely epic show. Like, you see them and then you see Steve Ignorant doing Crass, like holy shit, like that would be absolutely amazing. I'm seeing Heroes at New Friends Fest in Toronto and during the summer, and I'm super stoked about that. Like, if Steve Ignorant had a Canadian show, that would be pretty cool.
The problem, visa issue, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, sadly, it's like not that, you know what I mean? So
I know, yeah, it's that whole thing's too much. But I'm looking forward to hearing about your like experience at that show, because like that's gonna be absolutely just epic.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be real rad. And I gotta say, kudos to Scenic Presents for booking Heroes Collective. Honestly, that's a great opener for Steve Ignorant. Like that's all. Like, instead of just some generic quote anarcho band, or even worse, some generic street punk band, it's cool that they got Heroes Collective, which is punk but not like a ripoff of Crass. So that's pretty cool. You know?
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, so here's another fun story. Billy Joe Armstrong was in a bar in England. And the bar was called Borderline. No, I'm sorry. The bar was called Slim Jim's Liquor Store.
Yeah.
And there's a band called Borderline Toxic, and they're a cover band. And cover bands are huge in England. They're actually getting bigger here in USA, but like, cover bands are huge in England. Like, cover bands sell like way more than like most regular bands in England, which is crazy. It's getting like that here now in USA too, like Pink Floyd and Grateful Dead and Talking Head cover bands, but whatever. At any rate, so this cover band is playing and they start doing Green Day, and it turns out that Billy Joe Armstrong was there, and he jumped up on stage and sang Basket Case with the cover band. It was cool and fun and funny, and I thought it was neat. And do you think this was a setup, or do you think this is really real?
I don't care if it was a setup or whatever, because it's just, it's a lot of fun. Like, you can tell, like, he comes on stage and the crowd's going wild, and like the people on stage are happier than anything, and he looks like he's having an absolute blast. Like, it just looks fun. It just looks right. And I mean, it could easily have been set up, but it's just nice to see people having fun and see, like, you know, just some joy and stuff. Because if you're in a cover band and you're playing, and then the person that you're covering shows up, like, oh, and like plays with you, like, that's making your like year, you know, like, that's so cool. I mean, it's nerve-wracking because it's, am I doing your song right? But like, it would be, it's so cool. It's so nice. What do you think? Do you think it was set up, or do you think it was purely spontaneous?
I don't know. I mean, the skeptic point of me is that, like, these things never really just happen, you know, they, you know, but on the other hand, it does seem kind of legit, man. It just does seem like I mean, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. It sure could be that Billy Joe's hanging out at a bar and a cover band starts playing and they play a Green Day song without knowing that he's there. Not the only thing, but really, touring bands rarely hang out in bars where bands are playing because they hear bands all the time. But that being said, sometimes they go to bars to hang out where bands are playing, and it certainly could be the truth. So I'm going to say not a setup, and is a real deal thing. And for as much as we bust on Green Day and Billy Joe, like, everyone actually says he's a really nice guy. And I know for a fact that he's like actually funded some pretty cool punk type things. I know for a fact that he bought a new PA for 924 Gilman, even though 924 Gilman wouldn't let them play there, except for when they really needed money. Then they let Green Day do a secret show there, but that's 924 Gilman. That's not Green Day. I always thought it was interesting that Green Day, like, supported 924 Gilman after 924 Gilman wouldn't let them play there, instead of saying, screw you guys. I don't know what to make of that. I mean, certainly one of the main reasons – the reason 924 Gilman is 924 Gilman is really two reasons, or three maybe. Ivy, Rancid, and Green Day. Without those three bands, no one would give a crap about 924 Gilman, right?
Right.
And so 924 Gilman being the what's the word I'm looking for? What's the word?
Legendary?
Elitist that they are. They wouldn't let Green Day play there because they, quote, signed to a major label, because the worst thing in the world is signing to a major label. And that is the absolute worst thing you could do. and so despite that, Green Day bought them a new PA system later on and stuff. And I mean, do you think that was cool of Green Day, or do you think Green Day should be ashamed of themselves for helping out someone that says, we're too cool for you? You know what I mean? And in reality, it just makes 924 Gilman look that much more petty. Like, I'm not a huge Green Day fan, you know, but the fact that they got super famous after being 924 Gilman, and they're not a terrible band, and you know, there's no real bad done on Green Day that anybody knows about. So the fact that, like, 924 Gilman's like, well, you can't play here, just makes 924 Gilman look like a bunch of stupid babies and not like super cool uber punks, you know, at least from my perspective. Do you think Green Day should have funded 924 Gilman's sound system? And I'll add that Green Day and Billy Joe Armstrong have funded other similar things outside 924 Gilman, but they don't even make a big deal out of it, which is kind of cool. They don't say that, like, people in the know they did it, but they don't, like, broadcast it. Oh, we paid for this thing, which is pretty cool, you know?
That stuff's so awesome, because it's like, yeah, you're doing it for the right reasons. You're doing it because you love the music, and this is how you came up, and you want to make sure other people have that opportunity as well. And yeah, like, I think if someone donates something or whatever, makes a big deal of it, there's something going on. Like, it makes me very suspicious. So to do this and just be like, yeah, we're doing this out of the goodness of our heart, and you don't have to believe a press release. Like, we are even, like, broadcasting this. This is just something that, like, someone will mention, and you'll be like, oh, wow, that's really cool. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of power in that, I think. And, you know, just makes me like them more. I am a Green Day fan. I really like Green Day. But, yeah, the 924 Gilman thing, I think it's nice that they did it because for two reasons. The first is because that was a huge thing. Like, when they were coming up and they were playing there, like, it was massive for them, and to be able to build their fan base and have like some sense of community again, like before they did sign, but like just a huge influential place. And then them buying it is just continuing it. It's like, yeah, we have this success.
They didn't buy 924. They didn't buy.
No, I know.
They bought the PA system.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, like them buying like the PA system for 924 Gilman is like, yeah, we, you know, quote unquote, like made it or whatever. But like, we want young bands to have a place to play. We want them to be able to play with equipment that works, to be able to know how to use this, to be able to fulfill their dreams. And even if that's just getting on the stage once, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's an incredibly punk thing to do, because they are showing that they care, and they're showing that they care about the community, even if the community did turn their backs on them at a certain point. And then, yeah, for historical purposes, this also makes them look that much better. What were you going to say?
I agree pretty much everything. I'll add that it wasn't the community that turned their back on Green Day. It was the seven or eight people that control 924 Gilman, and specifically right. Tim Yo from Maximum Rock and Roll, who I just think is a dirty dog, or was a dirty dog. So yeah. So yeah. So anyways, that's that. Cool story. What track should we play?
We should play something by Tina Turner.
Should we play Tina Turner and David Bowie doing Let's Dance, or should we play just Tina Turner solo?
I think we should play Tina Turner solo, but I like the Just Dance version. That's fun.
Or Let's Dance, I should. What's Love Got to Do With It? You want to do Private Dancer? What's Love Got to Do With It? We Don't Need Another Hero from Mad Max. What do you want to do? Simply the best. Yeah,
We have to do Simply the Best.
Mega Tina Turner hit Simply the Best, and we will be right back. And we are back and talking about another iconic duo, in addition to Tina Turner and Iker. And what's your opinion of Tina Turner keeping the Turner name after voicing Ike Turner? Power move or forced to keep it? Or bad choice?
Power move, because it's, oh yeah, you are a complete and utter tool bag to me. I don't want to have to pay the amount of money to change my name. So I'm keeping it, and I'm going to be more successful than you, and I'm going to thrive and in your face.
I think Tina Turner certainly could afford to change her name, but I think that it is a power move, and that like Tina Turner is more famous than Ike Turner, and that she stole the name. She stole the guy's name from him, you know what I mean? Which is kind of cool. Power move. Speaking of power move, the Melvins and Boris are going on tour, and of course, and more. Yes. Where did Boris get their name from?
It's a Melvin song, right?
Exactly.
I don't remember
Boris
which one.
Named after the Melvin song. It's called Boris. That's the song.
Oh, there we go.
The opening band is Mr. Fields. It was like it was kind of confusing. It's co-headlining. Oh, and also Boris is playing all of Heavy Rocks, and Melvins are playing all of Bullhead, which includes the song Boris and other hits. This is part of the Melvins 40th anniversary celebration. Stay tuned to Punk News for more on that. We got some cool stuff coming up there. We also have some cool stuff regarding Dexy's Midnight Runners coming up, and some cool stuff regarding NoFX, and some cool stuff regarding Integrity. So a lot of cool stuff coming up, Punk News, in vague hints. Anyway, back to Melvins. It's called the Twins of Evil Tour. And at first, like it almost seemed, it's co-headline. And I'm like, is Boris playing over Melvin? Which to me, Boris is real cool. I like Boris, although some of the route, like, I for a hot minute I was really into Boris, And then one day I was listening to one of their umpteenth albums, and the whole album is just feedback. Like, it's really just feedback. And I'm like, what am I trying to prove to whom by listening to 60 minutes of feedback? You know what I mean? I'm like, I don't know what this proves to anyone. No, I do like Boris, and, you know, I like the more musical Boris albums.
Yeah.
That being said, I thought it was a little weird that they appeared to be headlining over Melvins, but I think this actually might just be Melvins being kind of classy, because, like, the poster is clearly Mackie Osborne work, and the Melvins are probably setting this up, or the Melvins people, because Mr. Fields is opening, which is an Amphetamine Reptile band. So Melvins actually might be headlining. They're just listening to Boris first just to be cool, or maybe they're going to switch back and forth. And maybe, I wouldn't put it past the Melvins, maybe they'll do some music on stage with Boris, which would be pretty cool.
Ooh, that would be awesome. I hope they do that.
Anyway, this tour is crazy. It's all of September, half of October, half of August. It's a massive trek. It's, 30, 44. It's about 51 dates or something. It's pretty cool. They're playing all over. They're playing Philadelphia as well as... actually, tickets go on sale tomorrow. Bethlehem. I might go to both. I'm definitely going to go to Philadelphia. And so, yeah, this is going to be. I'm going to fly to San Francisco to see a San Francisco show, because there's no better place to see the Melvins than San Francisco for sure. So, anyways, this is going to be a really cool. Plus, they'll have more of their rare merch there because it's earlier on in the tour, and Melvins always put up super cool merch for sale, custom records. Different versions, like all this crazy. It's expensive, but it's all really cool. And actually, last time I saw the Melvins was in Asbury Park. I brought a lot of cash to buy some stuff, and I was going to buy a ton of stuff, but they had two custom box sets, so I just bought those two things. And I've always been torn. I'm like, I got these two really cool box sets, but I could have got like 10 records instead of like two box sets. You know what I mean? So I don't know, man. Although I did get something really cool. I got an artist proof edition of one of their records, which is basically like the band's own review copy before they actually put it in mass production, which was pretty cool. At any rate, more of the merch of the band. At any rate, it's the Melvins 40th anniversary. They just put out a newish album, which was fantastic. I'm super psyched for this, man. Danzig, Steve Ignorant, Melvins, what a late summer, early fall. I mean, wowee. Em, are you into this at all, or you don't care?
I like Melvins. I like Boris. I'm really excited for the Boris Uniform collab album, because like the singles from that have been really cool. And like Heavy Rocks is amazing. So this would be just an awesome show to see. Both bands are going to kill it. And I've never heard of their opener, but like, I'm sure they're going to kill it too.
Well, there you have it. Mr. Fields. Yeah, Mr. Fields is definitely like a classic. Definitely is like a classic Amphetamine Reptile record, like noise rock, like bum, 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 that kind of stuff. So yeah, kind of cool. Like Unsane. They remind me of Unsane, that kind of a thing. So yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
At any rate. So that's that. Let's see what we have to talk about.
A good opener.
Problem Patterns. Emma, tell us about Problem Patterns.
Yeah. All right. Problem Patterns are one of my favorite, like, bands, newish bands. I talked about them on the podcast before. They're just great. So they're out of Belfast. They're a four piece. They all switch instruments, they all sing, they all do everything. They are amazing, talented, really cool individuals. So they've finally announced their debut album, and up to this point they have a handful of singles out. They have an EP called Good For You, Aren't You Great, which is amazing, and I am so excited to hear a full length from them, because I really enjoy the songs they have out, and I can't wait to hear more. So that'll be out later this year on Alkapop Records, which is also a pretty cool record label. So they also released a video for their new song, Letter of Resignation. So the video concept was done by Beverly Bull, who plays in the band, and it was directed by Brendan Seamus. So it shows the band dressed in like professional suits, and like they're dancing, they're walking, they're smoking, they're taking phone calls, like they're around Belfast, they're on the beach, like, and at the end, Bev runs into the sea, and it's really funny. And the whole thing is like, I read something that it was dedicated the people who had to leave a workplace or home or a situation because they felt like they couldn't be themselves without being judged or discriminated against. And that really comes through in the lyrics. And if you listen to the lyrics, like, they're very powerful, they're very good, and the delivery is very, like, hard-hitting too. Like, it's a great punk song, and there's a lot of emotion in it, and there's a lot of rage in it, and the video is just a bunch of fun, and I can't wait to hear more from them. So, John, what do you make of Problem Patterns and their new video?
Yeah, it's cool. I definitely dug the video. I dug the suits, the pink suits, which was a lot of fun. I was like fast, loud, and bombastic bands, and this band is fast, loud, and bombastic. They've got kind of the fall thing going where it's almost more like a rant, which is always kind of fun and cool. And so, yeah, I dug it. It's cool.
Problem Patterns to rule the world. That's what I say.
Here's something that's a little bit more divisive. The Ergs have released a remix version of Pray for Rain. It's been remixed by Steve Albini. He had remixed the entire Dork Rock Cork Rod album, which is kind of like the landmark Ergs album, although some people prefer Jersey's Best Prancers. First of all, Pray for Rain is a crazy track in that, like, it's like a perfect slice of pop rock in that, like, if Third Eye Blind or Oasis or Silverchair or any of those bands released this track in 1994, it would be a multi-million dollar seller. It would, like Pray for Rain would be as big as "And If You Would Step Back from That Ledge, My Friend, I Would Understand." Like, Pray for Rain is that much of a masterpiece of a record. Too bad for the Ergs, it came out in 2002 and not 1994, a mere 8 years. and of course, by then, you know, even by then, that kind of alt rock was kind of fading away. And Ergs are famously a pop punk band, not a alt rock band. But I mean, that track and other tracks are such huge cuts. I wonder if it's maddening to the band that Pray for Rain, like, didn't sell millions and millions and millions of copies. I really do wonder, you know, or if they, you know, realize they're a pop punk band, they don't care. So anyway, people were kind of like liking this, the remix, and some people were hating it. I don't know. It sounds fine to me. It sounds perfectly good and clear. I didn't bother me at all. I wouldn't say it radically changed the song. I thought maybe it was a slightly crisper version, but it sounded fine to me. Emma, were you enraged by this remix, or did you think it was fine, or did you think it was totally awesome? And actually, and more, do you have any background with the Ergs? I mean, you're younger than I am, so maybe, like, the Ergs, like, don't really mean that much to you because you came around much longer after that. So, like, are you familiar with Pray for Rain? And are you familiar with how big they were at Punk News and other places when they were around the first time?
I think, well, I'm aware of, like, Pray for Rain, and I'm aware of the Ergs because of Punk News. That's kind of the thing, like, the two kind of go hand in hand. So they were definitely one of the bands that, like, again, I was just kind of seeing everywhere, so I did check out. I like the Ergs. I'm not, like, a huge Ergs fan, but I do enjoy the Ergs. And I have no idea why people are so angry about this, because, yeah, like, exactly like you said, it's just a little crisper version. Like, there's a bit more depth of sound. The vocals are a little bit more clear. That's it. Like, it's a good version of the song. And the version beforehand was also good. So I don't see the big uproar about it. Like, there's no drastic changes. You know, like, if I'd pressed play and it was, you know, there's an electronic element to it, or, you know, like, it sounds like they're at war with, like, space, then, yeah, I'd be like, what's this? You know, but this is good. It's just very straightforward remix.
Well, there you have it. Let's play. Let's play some Pray for Rain, the new version by Steve Albini. And we're back. And more, any words for the listeners of the Punk News Podcast tonight?
Let me see. It is June. June is Pride Month. So support your favorite queer creators and businesses because they need it. Also support them year round because, you know, don't be a dick. Only you can prevent forest fires. Wear a mask, run air purifiers, stay as safe as possible, keep your lungs as clean as you can.
Well, there you have it. Only you can prevent forest fires. And we'll see you next week.